Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the county, you can call us at 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is Things That End, Some of Them End Badly. Each of my guests will discuss endings and what we make of them. My first guest is delighted to realize that people will actually pay her to do what she does best. She's a journalist and author of 8 books who focuses on the story of her own life in her latest book titled My Lie, A True Story of False Memory. My second guest is an author and educator who's made it part of his life's work to gain recognition for the forgotten African-American historical figures. We'll talk to him about his latest book, Blood and Brotherhood. My third guest believes all things end. Some of them we must end sooner than others. We'll discuss the employees, the businesses, the relationships we have to give up in order to move forward from his latest book, Necessary Endings. As always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Meredith Moran has a rich life. She's built a house and raised goats outside of Taos. She's lived with the cast of Hair in London. She's installed brakes and union consciousness at the Ford Assembly Plant in San Jose. She resumed her journalistic career back in 1982. Since then, she's written or co-authored 8 books focused on her greatest passion, the differences between how things are in America and how they should be, and what we can do about them. Meredith lives in Oakland with her 2 grown and continue to growing sons, Peter and Jesse. She's happily married to a horticultural genius, Catherine Thomas. Welcome to the show. How are you today, Meredith?
Well, actually a little congested, but you'll bear with me, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you on the show and thankful that you're here in whatever condition that we can have you in. So we'll try not to be too taxing on you there.
Okay.
Well, now, your story is so fascinating. I don't want to give it away for our readers, but truly you've lived in a nightmare. There's no other way to put it. You were isolated, as you put it, on planet incest for many, many years, only to discover that you were wrong. So lay it out for my listeners, if you would, please. What is your story?
Well, my story is actually our culture's story, and starting in the early 80s and going through the early 90s in this country, there was this sudden recognition of something that was true, which was that a lot of children were sexually abused. And what happened was that, as we tend to do, we lost sight of the nuance, and the whole country just sort of went incest crazy and started seeing incest perpetrators everywhere and incest victims everywhere. And I started out as a journalist reporting on the truth about incest as I saw it, and helping to sort of propagate this idea that we had overlooked this crime and that we needed to start protecting children. And in a nutshell, over the next 5 years of writing journalistic articles about this, I actually sort of fell under the spell of incest mania and started to believe that my father had molested me.
Amazing story. So now, how did you come to believe that your father had molested you? I mean, how did you go from, in your case, believing that he had not molested you to believing that he had molested you, and then back to believing that he had not molested you?
It is a pretty incredible process, and honestly, it gives me a lot of humility going forward in my life, because a lot of my friends will listen to what I consider extremists politically these days, like the Tea Party people, or someone saying, you know, Obama wasn't born in this country, or he's a Muslim, and people will say, how can these people be so deluded? How can they believe these lies? And I'll say, I did it, you know. It's a very complicated process, and it's hard for me to describe it in such a short period of time, but I will say that the way I perceive it is that it was both an internal and external process. Oops, sorry about that. I'm going to turn that off. In the culture, people were believing that incest was everywhere, and the newspaper headlines were full of it. The McMartin trial was going on in Southern California.
Yes.
And so there were these sort of external factors that made us believe that it was everywhere. And then internally, there was the psychological profile of me and my father and our family that contributed to it.
Well, incest has to be one of the most frightening accusations that any family can face. I mean, just think of the broken trust, think of the betrayal, everything else that incest brings along with it. So what was the impact when you came out with your accusations? What was the impact on your family?
It was devastating, of course, to my family. And again, because of the surrounding context, my family members had read the articles I've been writing over the years that, you know, the main point of which was incest is a hidden crime. You never know when it's going on. There's often no physical evidence. And if a child or an adult says that he or she was molested, you've got to believe them because that's the first step of healing. So when I told my brother, for example, who was the closest person in my family, he believed me, and in fact, he ended up going to therapy, too, to see if he had been abused, which I only found out later when I was writing the book. My mother did not believe me, but she was very supportive because that's what she was supposed to do. And basically, nobody said to me, you're out of your mind. This could not have happened. Everybody in the family kind of went along with the protocol, which was to believe. You know, there was a bumper sticker at the time that said, believe the children, and this sort of fell under that that slogan.
And that was the mood of the country at the time. But don't you find it interesting, particularly now, Meredith, looking back on it, that this is one of those occasions where it's contrary to our judicial system in the United States, that when a child comes out and says this, whether right or wrong, we naturally assume that the person is guilty until proven innocent, which is the opposite of our judicial system, which is innocent until proven guilty.
It's so interesting that you bring that up, and what a conundrum it was for me, because I had been an activist since I was a teenager, you know, I was a civil rights worker and against the war in Vietnam and the feminist and all that, and for me, and so I had never had much faith in the judicial system because I saw so many injustices in it, mm-hmm. and then to be relying on the judicial system and trying to get the judicial system really to violate the precepts of the Constitution was a very strange, one of many strange situations I found myself in.
All right. We're talking to Meredith Moran, everybody. Her book is My Lie, A True Story of False Memory. We're talking about her life experience and one of the most tumultuous things that could ever happen in a family. So, Meredith, how much time passed before you realized that you were wrong and you retracted your accusation?
Unfortunately, it was almost a decade. It was 8 years from the time I officially accused my father until and stopped speaking to him and stopped letting my children be around him until I realized I was wrong and apologized to him.
Mm. And tell us about the reconciliation that you must have gone through with your father, because that's devastating. I'm a father myself. I'm a grandfather. And I think about that. I'm not sure. How do you repair those bridges once they're broken?
Again, it's kind of paradoxical. You know, on the one hand, my father was very forgiving, which is amazing and a miracle and a blessing for me and my kids. And at the same time, his condition of forgiveness was, we'll never talk about it again. So after 8 years of not seeing each other, we started seeing each other again and never speaking of what had happened for the 8 years. He didn't see my kids, who were young at the time, and we didn't talk and so on. And for 10 years more, I went along with that because I just wanted to get back into the normal groove in my family. And then when I started hearing similar stories from other people, most of them women my age, who would say, my father died and I never got to apologize to him for falsely accusing him, or my father has never met his grandchildren because, you know, I falsely accused him. that's when the journalist part of me kicked in, and I started researching it and writing the book. And I asked my father and stepmother if I could interview them for the book and if they would be willing to let me tell our story so that other people who had gone through this or are still going through this could get some understanding from it.
Wow, an incredible openness and honesty in your family to write the book, My Lie. We're talking to Meredith Moran, everybody. Meredith, in what ways has this experience affected you personally?
Well, as I said, there will never be another time that I will look at a person and say, you know, how can that person be convinced of that? You know, I am a person with very strong beliefs, but this really taught me to, first of all, question my own beliefs and to develop my own sort of meter for determining when I'm being reactive and when I'm actually believing something. So I have kind of like this physical little test that I do with myself. If I find myself arguing with someone now, or even being, you know, just angry or resistant to someone's what someone is telling me, I always now just take a breath, and if I'm still feeling that way, I'll just say, I need a minute, and I'll just go away and calm myself down and come back and listen. And that's my first clue that something is going on for me in reacting to what they're saying. So it's really changed my whole thought process. It's made me sort of Obama-esque in a political way. You know, I don't see things as being as polarized as I used to. And on a personal level, it's just made me a lot more humble. For one thing, I'm living in a family that has forgiven me for, you know, ruining it for a decade.
Well, that is a true testament to your family and the strength there. I have to ask you a follow-on question, though. Any regret?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I could undo this and redo it, that 10 years of time, I definitely would. I mean, not only did I do so much harm to my family, but it wasn't really fun. You know, if you've ever known anyone who lives her life or his life blaming someone for his or her pain, you know that that person who's doing the accusing is not feeling really great either, you know.
True.
It was a really hellish existence, and it was a very consuming project also, you know, because I did not have memories, and I was trying to get them. So I was going to therapy all the time and, you know, groups and, you know, just spending so much energy trying to remember these things that never happened.
We're talking to Meredith Moran, everybody. Her book, My Lie, A True Story of False Memory. And now, Meredith, I'm going to ask you to put your journalistic hat on for just a moment, because
sure.
There's actually a syndrome behind this. It's called false memory syndrome. Tell us about that, and also tell us about the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, please.
Well, I'll start backwards. The foundation is an organization that formed in the early 90s of parents who were being or believed they were or said they were falsely accused. And they've had over 25,000 members, just to give you a sense of the scope of the problem. At the same time, and I really support what they do, at the same time, I'm critical of the fact that they have sort of pronounced there to be a syndrome, as if it's a medically diagnosed or psychologically diagnosed condition, and it isn't. That's not an actual diagnosis, false memory syndrome. But what is true is that there definitely is the ability of the human mind to believe something that isn't true and to recapture memories that never of things that never happened, and that was a method of therapy during this period of time I'm describing. And still is to some extent. I think there are still, I mean, since I published the book, I've had many, many calls and emails from therapists who are treating parents whose child is adult child is accusing them, and they're saying it's false. And also from the parents themselves, I've gotten heartbreaking emails from so many parents whose 22-year-old daughter went off to college and maybe had an eating disorder, went to therapy, and the next thing they knew, the daughter was accusing them of abuse. So it still goes on today, and that's one of the secrets about false memory today, is how much it still is prevalent.
Well, it's ingrained in our society now, and I want to take people back, Meredith, if I can, to really the 1980s and the first national case where it grabbed headlines about child molestation. You mentioned it earlier. It's the McMartin preschool trial, and that
right.
really raised awareness nationally on that. Just to refresh people's memories, here in Southern California, 7 people were charged with child molestation. They were tried, and subsequently acquitted in what turned out to be the costliest trial in U.S. history. 7 years of testimony, $15 million, and ultimately no convictions. A lot of the testimony was by children and turned out to be false in some of the same way that you're talking about. Your memories were false there. So my question to you is, as a society, I mean, we look at that $15 million, and especially now in the recession that we're faced with, in cases where the police investigate a crime, they collect the evidence and things like that, and this goes to trial, should we require the plaintiff in this case to repay the court costs if a conviction is overturned because the witness recants their testimony?
Well, as a general principle of jurisdiction of the judicial system, I would say yes to that. Believe it or not, I got an email 3 days ago from someone protesting my writing of the book who said, I was a parent of a McMartin child, and my child was abused. And the fact that those people were not convicted is a weakness of the judicial system and not because they were innocent. I mean, there are still people walking around not far from where you're broadcasting from in Manhattan Beach who believe that those children were abused. Hundreds of children were taken to tunnels under the school and were participating in orgies and things like that. So, The whole issue of true and false is really the issue that underlies my book. And as I said earlier in our conversation today, I find many, many instances of it in other realms of life that are very significant to our whole culture and our media and our justice system. That's pretty scary to me, having seen for myself how easily we can be manipulated.
Well, it is a frightening story. It's a very polarizing issue. You yourself just said, here we are 30 years after the McMartin preschool incident, and you're still getting, I will call it, characterize it, hate mail because of the book that you wrote. We've been talking to Meredith Moran, everybody. Her latest book, My Lie, A True Story of False Memory. Meredith, it's riveting stuff. If people are listening to the sound of your voice, they want to learn more about you, they want to learn more about your story, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
They can go to my website, which is Meredith Marin, MeredithMaran.com.
That's MeredithMaran.com to learn more about the book. Meredith, thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, and take care.